If somebody figured out what the drugs are that get released in your brain when you exercise and they sold it on the street, I'm certain it would be illegal because it is so powerful. So you are smarter, you are more attentive, you are more relaxed, everything gets better.
You are listening to the Luminary Business Podcast, the podcast where passionate entrepreneurs and executives just like you discover how to become more prominent and influential and build a profitable business that truly matters. Join me, Todd Staples, as I unlock the foundational skills, habits, and mindset needed to produce optimal personal and business results. Hey, Dave, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So this is actually my favorite part of the show because I get to get inside your head a little bit and see what makes you tick as a person. Less about your business and more about your own, your habits, your values, your perspectives that literally allow you to step into your shoes every day and go do what you do. And I like to start it with a quote that I love. There's a book called The Winner's Edge. I don't know if you've read it, but he says, winners don't do different things. They do things differently. So really what I want to touch on in this conversation is not so much exactly what you do, but what you do differently and maybe the moments in your life where you've figured out, oh, if I just approach this thing in a different way than maybe I learned or than most people do, I will achieve more success. So I want to start by just talking about your day because I think it's really – I always learn a lot by hearing about someone's just – basic habits, when they get up, what they do during the day. So can you describe your typical day if someone were to step in your shoes? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I typically get up pretty early in the morning. I also go to bed pretty early at night. But so I have two kids, and when my kids get up, then my brain sort of focuses on them. So I get up probably somewhere between 4 and 5. And the very first thing I do is I swallow a bunch of vitamins, which I think help keep me healthy. And then I exercise for somewhere between 20 minutes and an hour and 15. And I do that 6 out of 7 days, unless I'm doing insane travel, which, you know, no, most people don't do. And then I sort of get on to the thing, the big things that I have to do. So if I have a report due to a client or I'm trying to get a book chapter done, I got to do that first. And I'm a big believer. I hope your listeners are too, that there are certain things that we as people can do better in the morning than in the afternoon. Yeah. And you should adjust your day to those rhythms of your brain as opposed to trying to adjust your brain to the rhythms of the day. So I don't do email in the morning. I'm always ticking people off. Actually, you sent me an email this morning and I barely looked at it.
Yep.
Because I'm doing really important things. And if you let yourself get – this is just for me. I don't know if this is true for everybody. I'm sure it isn't. But if I let myself get distracted by the little things, then I never get to the big thing. So I start I exercise. Oh, I meditate just about every day for about 20 minutes in the morning. Then I exercise, get back from that, do a shower and all that stuff, and then I start my day typically so that I'm getting to work about the same time as most people. But unlike most people, I've handled all my health kind of maintenance concerns.
Yep.
And that gives me an edge. And I've also done the really important thing. And so people ask questions like, how do you develop new material? How do you find out what you're going to do for this client? You know, you just always seem to know. Well, I know because I work really, really hard at it. But I work early in the morning. And people say, well, you weren't working because you weren't responding to email. Right, but I'm typically responding to email.
I wasn't responding because I was working.
Yeah, exactly. And then later in the day, it's all about, you know, killing zombies. So an email is a zombie. Kill it. Put a bullet through its head.
Yep.
So I'm doing little things to just kind of get it off my plate. And then I wind down pretty early. I typically stop working around maybe 8, maybe it's kind of 7 or 8. I try to spend some time with my kids and my wife, and I go to bed ridiculously early. But remember, I'm up at like 4.
Yeah, 4 or 5. That's early.
And I'm reading and I'm doing other stuff. So that's my day.
You know, I like what you're saying about like the small things and the big things, but I think more so than that for me, for myself, and for a lot of other people I've interviewed, it's – that morning routine is so important to set the tone of doing things on your terms. So your big projects, if you start your day in proactive mode where you're deciding every single thing you do, your gym routine, your breakfast routine, your kids, if you see them in the morning, your first big project, you own that part of the day. You're not getting influenced by email. You're not distracted by little fires that come up. You're not distracted by me emailing you about a podcast. You don't need to think about that in the morning because you need to get your big, what does Brian Tracy call it? Swallow the frog, eat the frog. Do you know that saying?
I read Brian Tracy years and years and years ago. It's usually called the rocks. It's taken from this principle that is often done in high school where some like chemistry teacher or something will say, look, here's this big jar and here are rocks, which are big, and here's sand, which are composed of little pieces. So put the sand in the jar. And now the jar is full of sand. And then the teacher will say, now put these rocks in there. And of course you can't because it's full of sand. Mm-hmm. So what you do instead is you put the rocks in and then you put the sand in and then you're going to fill more of it. But when you have a packed day and then you try to stick something really big and important on top of it, you can't do it. So the saying is put the rocks in first.
Got it. I like that. I've actually seen a video of that on YouTube. So for listeners, I'll put that in the notes.
So too. I actually had a high school teacher who did that. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. And I don't have any idea where it started. So if somebody thinks I ripped him off, it was, what was his name? Mr. Filatico. He was a chemistry teacher. Wow. And he actually did that.
Wouldn't it be great if he was the inventor? Doubt it.
With a name like Filatico, he should be, right?
Yeah. So that's good. I like the start to your day. Does that carry throughout your whole day? Does that help you manage your time and your energy and stay focused throughout the day? Or are there other things you do to help with your energy and your focus?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you exercise in the morning, you're giving yourself – if somebody figured out what the drugs are that get released in your brain when you exercise and they sold it on the street, I'm certain it would be illegal.
Yep.
Because it is so powerful. And it has, as far as we know, no side effects. So you are smarter. You are more attentive. You are more relaxed. Everything mm-hmm. gets better. And it's like we were talking about, you know, in part one, if you get your sleep and you exercise, it's amazing how much crap you can take during the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. I mean, that exercise in the morning, I've dabbled with evening exercise, morning, just weekends. And recently I've been doing every single morning pretty early. Not quite as early as you, but I'm up at 5:45, 6 every day and in the gym. And it is magical what it does for your day. It really is. So there's two things I really want to cover today. I know we don't have a ton of time, but I want to talk about mentors and a great gift. A couple other questions too, but I really admire the stories I've heard from you about your mentors and how you've gone about attracting these people to you. Can you talk about that? Because I think it's so critical in your success. I would imagine it's very critical to what has led you to where you are today. And I think it would be very helpful for people listening.
Yeah, sure. So if somebody asked me a question, why have you done as much as you have? My one word answer would be mentors. I've had great mentors. I've had people who've invested in me. And then usually people's next question is how's that happened? What's your formula? And at first I actually had no idea. And then I realized I actually was using a formula. I just didn't know it was a formula. And if you take a step back and you look at people who are good at attracting mentors, they're almost all good at the same formula. So it's actually pretty simple. It's you want to think about the people you want in your world, just in general. Don't think about necessarily the mentors. Just who do I want in my community? Who do I want in my tribe? And you probably want amazing people in your tribe. And if you then look at the mentors are going to be a subset of your tribe. So you make sure you put amazing people in, and the way you do it is by helping them. You don't actually help yourself. I get people who come up to me, Todd, you probably do too, who say, I want you to be my mentor. And I don't know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Am I supposed to sit in my office and write a motivating speech that I give them on the phone once a week? I don't know what to do with that, right?
But or the common question, can I pick your brain? Which is sort of along the same lines, but they want to do it every week and just pick.
Sure. Well, so it's funny. I was in a meeting not too long ago, and I won't mention the name of the person for reasons that'll be obvious, but the person was introducing me to a group of people and said, and Dave is one of my mentors. And my immediate reaction, which thankfully I didn't act on, was to say, oh, come on. I mean, you know, we had a couple lunches. We met for coffee a few times. I wasn't your mentor. Mm-hmm. But actually in their world, I probably was. So that means you can be mentored by people who
don't know it.
Well, right. The mentor doesn't know they're a mentor. They might think that they're a friend. They might think that they're somebody you talk about football with, but actually you're getting mentoring out of it. And so the most important thing is to give them what they want. And I'm mentioning people, but I don't want to say them in bad lights, but one of my mentors is one of the more famous people. He's passed away now in Los Angeles. And I mean, in many years. And mm-hmm. I would meet with him in his office and we would talk about all sorts of things. And late in his life, he became quite forgetful. He would forget that he knew people. He never forgot meeting me, and he and I were actually having these conversations past the point where he had forgotten most people. So the quite obvious question is, why was he remembering me and he wasn't remembering the other people?
Yeah.
Because when we would talk, it wasn't that he was mentoring me. We were actually talking about an issue that was very important to him that had to do with a book that he was writing. And so that's what we were talking about. And then around the edges, he would say things like, well, I mean, you're helping me. I mean, what can I possibly do for you? And I wouldn't then say, well, it's funny you should ask. I have a list of four things. Because then it looks like you're sort of taking from them. Yep. I would answer quite honestly, just having these conversations, I'm getting far more out of it than you realize. And they would say, well, I mean, if that's the case, then let's set up another one. Mm. And these would go on for years. So that's how you attract mentors.
And how do you do that? I mean, I love that advice. How do you do that from the very beginning? Let's say I have a mentor that's a big public figure. How do you go about adding value to someone you don't know? Might be hard to reach on the phone. And it's sort of awkward starting that relationship.
Yeah, there actually is a technique, and it's unfortunately we don't have time to do it, and it really requires being able to see stuff. I think you're familiar with it, Todd. It's called word mapping.
Yes.
If you map everything that a person is saying, I mean, the simple way to think about it, unfortunately, this loses some of the brilliance of the technique. But if you take something that they say, especially when they're operating off script, and so they're not reading from a teleprompter, they're not reading a prepared speech, when they're just, they might be doing a TV interview or something, look really carefully at the actual words that they're saying. And people will often say something like, well, you know, I've been pretty successful in my life, but, you know, I've never written a book. Well, I'd love to write a book. And then they go on.
Mm-hmm.
They actually think, that person who's just been interviewed actually thinks that they are transmitting this huge request to the world, please help me write a book. And then if you respond and you say, you know, I've been pretty successful at writing books. I don't know if I can help you, but I'd be happy to, you know, meet with you for a half hour. I'll sign an NDA so I don't take away any of your ideas. It's amazing how many people respond to that.
So it's really listen. And I know we don't have time to go too deep, but listen and map out those words. You have an exercise on your website about this, don't you? Culturesync.net.
Yeah. There's some stuff on word mapping, and okay. I did something for CBS News on it years ago. It's probably going to be a big part of the next book that I'm working on, and I'm not trying to save it. I mean, if I'm doing a certain kind of speech or event, I'll show people how to word map. But you actually have to show them as opposed to just describe it over the phone.
Okay. But if you could summarize that just in a, you know, simple steps, how do you?
Oh, okay. I mean, step one, find something that some unmet need that they have, and not because you've psychoanalyzed them or you've assumed something, but because they've actually said it. I would like to do blank, but I can't seem to make any progress on it. And if you say, well, the person I'm thinking of never says that, I'm willing to bet they do. I'm just willing to bet you don't hear them say it because they say it so quickly. Mm-hmm. That it comes across as an afterthought and you don't remember it. Just like in the first part we were talking about, people get mad and they don't remember it.
Yep.
You're in the presence of someone and you hear it and it even makes sense in the moment, but it's lost on you. It didn't leave a memory trail. They were screaming this request, but nobody hears it as a request. They hear it as a self-disclosure. It actually was a request. If you follow up on it, it's amazing how many
people it can differentiate yourself from all the other listeners and the other people maybe you're approaching them to take, you approach them to give. I like that. It's great.
Yep.
And I know we just have a few minutes, but I really would love it if you talk about your perspective on the great gift.
Sure. A great gift. So everybody has several and they have a main one. And so a great gift has three components to it. Number one, it has no off switch. So you can't not do it. So it's typically, it's something that you see all the time. You can't not see it. And because you see it, you sort of have to respond to it in some way. And I'll give you some examples in a sec. Number two is it will get you in trouble if you're not very careful. So it has no off switch is number one. Number two is it will get you in trouble if you're not very careful. And number three, you can remember moments when it suddenly stopped working. So although it has no off switch, it's kind of like Superman is always Superman, except there are moments when he's around kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
So there are moments when it will shut off. So let me give you some examples. So one of them is from myself is I see potential in people, in ideas, in businesses. I can't not see it. So I walk into a business. I don't actually see the business that's there. I see the business that could be there. When I meet with students, I don't actually meet with the student who's there. I meet with the student that student could become.
Got it.
And the reason that gets me in trouble is when I write notes on their paper, I'm not responding to them as who they are. I'm responding to them as who they could be. And then usually they say I'm putting too much pressure on them or I'm seeing something that they don't see in themselves. But actually, I am seeing them according to their potential. So I can come across as being really demanding. But it's because I actually don't see them as they are. I see them as they could be if they maximize their potential. And then I will never forget, I was probably 22 years old. I was working as a management consultant. And I got this really bad flu. And it sort of affected me cognitively. And I stopped being able to see that.
You lost
it. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I was sort of delirious, I guess, or something, but it kind of went away. Or a lot of people will go through periods. They're not quite depression, but they're more, you know, the old word for it was a fallow period. And you just can't see opportunity. You can't see potential. So, you know, that's a great gift. We were talking about Elon Musk in the first part. One of Elon Musk's great gifts is he sees engineering and economic solutions that other people don't see. He can't not see them. And so he helped to create SolarCity. He helped to create SpaceX. He helped to create Tesla. In all three of those cases, the solutions were fairly simple, fairly straightforward. They were either financial. Remember, he's a Wharton grad, which is a business school at the University of Pennsylvania, or they were engineering solutions. Typically, they were both. And he can't not see them. So he walks down the street, and he's just like driven crazy with, why is that building designed the way that it is? How come planes haven't gotten faster? How come this? How come that? He can't not see it. And how does it get him in trouble? He seems really scattered. When he was getting established in his career, he seemed to be doing so many things, you know, the guy couldn't focus. Were there periods when it went away? If you read about his life or you hear him tell a story, there certainly were periods where that was really diminished. And so you become aware of something by its sudden absence. So that's a great gift.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I would love to go deeper on that, but we don't. I know we're closing in on the end time here. Just a quick question that came up in what we talked about before in the other episode and now. Is there anything that you specifically put on your do not do list that sort of helps with your focus and productivity?
Yeah, I don't do email in the morning. I don't do, you know, I've been a faculty member at USC for, oh man, it's my 20th year. I don't go to faculty meetings. I haven't been to a faculty meeting.
Oh, no kidding.
In so many years, I don't even know where they're held anymore. I don't know what the agenda is. I just don't go to them. And that has a whole bunch of disadvantages. I don't know the new professors. I know all the people in administration, but I don't know the new professors. When somebody asks me who are the new hotshots at the business school at USC, I actually don't know because I never go to faculty meetings. I mean, unless they reach out to me and want to have lunch, which I would always do with a colleague, I actually don't know.
Huh. Is there something specific about faculty meetings that makes you not go to them? Or do you think meetings in general are wasteful?
Well, I think meetings in general are wasteful. Faculty meetings in particular are absolute time sucks that will kill your brain cells. They are at the worst possible time, which are first thing in the morning because people are teaching and doing research all day.
Oh, God.
So unless you make it a breakfast meeting, that's my most productive time of the day. So wait, I have to get up. I have to put – there's sort of – people tend to be formal because we're in a business school. People put on suits or they, you know, dress like they're going to be teaching. So I got to do that. I got to drive all the way downtown, which for me is about 20 minutes. I've got to go someplace and, you know, slop eggs on my plate. And then I got to make small talk chit chat with people. And then I got to hear all these windbags talk about windbag stuff for like an hour and a half. I would much rather be at home writing or be at home
creating.
So I don't do that. I think your effectiveness is a function of that which you do not do. So if you don't have things on your don't do list or stop doing list, then you're just not going to be very effective.
You know, and I think there's a whole nother conversation there that we can't have right now, but I love asking myself the question, when something comes up in my business or my life, how can I not do this thing?
Right.
And if you start with that question, you realize, oh yeah, there's someone else who's better suited for this, so I can focus on something that's more important. And if you start with that, how can I not do this? I mean, obviously it's not for everything, but
right.
It's a good framework to have. All right. Well, good. Well, I'm going to wrap up. If you could give the people listening one thing to do, maybe regarding a great gift, maybe identifying that, maybe it has to do with mentors, maybe it has to do with their daily schedule. You've mentioned a bunch of good things already, but what would you say is one piece of advice that you would feel would have the biggest impact on their life and their business? What would that be?
There's somebody in your world, in your tribe, in your community that you know, it's probably somebody you think of as being unapproachable because they're successful, they're busy, they might be important or all of those, or rich, and they need something from you. They don't know how to ask, but they need something from you. And it's your job to figure out what that is and to give it to them. That's your job.
That's
the reason that's important is now we're setting up mentoring relationships.
Yep. Yep. I love that. So, I think that's a great lesson to leave people with. Good. Well, great, Dave. Well, it was so much fun to have you on again. Thank you for going over all this. I think there's a lot of things to learn here. I'm going to put some of the insights in the notes because I don't even have time to wrap up. But thanks for joining us. And I will speak to you next time.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you for listening today. Before you go, I want to leave you with three important questions designed to get you results from what you just heard. Number one, what one lesson did you just learn that you can take action on? Two, what single action can you commit to doing in the next 24 hours to integrate this skill, habit, or mindset into your daily life? And three, what can you do to ensure you will actually take this action? Speed of implementation is the key to success, and you have got to take action on what you just learned. Perhaps you need to put a reminder in your calendar, put a post-it on your computer screen, or talk to an accountability partner to check in to make sure you did this. Whatever you do, make sure you take action on the one key thing you learned from this episode to make sure you start seeing results. You deserve the success and peace of mind that comes from building a profitable and influential business that truly matters. You deserve it, your family deserves it, the world deserves the best business, products, and services you have to offer. The thing is, sometimes it's hard to take action on your own, which is exactly why we've created the Luminary Business Community at luminarybusiness.com. If you want to be part of this thriving community of entrepreneurs and executives committed to building profitable and influential businesses, head over there and sign up for our waiting list. As a member, you will get training, checklists, cheat sheets to grow your business fast. You'll get access to exclusive in-person events and meetups. You'll get expert coaching from me and other experts in the group and feedback when you need it most. Fourth, you'll have access to a supportive community of like-minded entrepreneurs. Finally, if you liked what you heard on the show, please subscribe to the podcast, write a review on iTunes, or share a link to this episode with one of your friends. It will help them learn and will also spark conversations that could potentially lead to new business for you, which is what this entire show is about. Thanks for listening, and make it a great one.